Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. How do you go from a 1.88 GPA in your second year of undergrad to getting a medical school acceptance? That's what we're going to find out today. Pre-med year, session number 474. Hello, and welcome to the Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. And welcome to the Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am loving bringing back a lot of these interviews with successful students. If you are enjoying these, I hope you are. I hope you are. If you are, don't forget to go tell everyone about this podcast, your advisors or your classmates about this podcast, the motivation, encouragement, and information that you get from this podcast for free every week. This week, we're talking to Mike, who had a little setback in his second year of undergrad with a 1.88 GPA and figuring out if this was the path for him and what he needed to do to get back in the driver's seat and ultimately get that acceptance to medical school. Before we do jump in, I want to talk about the MCAT Minutes brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. As we're recording this, it's the end of January 2022. It is time to start ramping up your MCAT prep if you haven't already. If you are applying here in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, you may be coming down to the wire with your MCAT prep. And if that's the case, check out the Blueprint MCAT and Sketchy Bundle, where you get access to Blueprint full-length exams, which are key to doing well on the MCAT, as well as access to Sketchy's brand new MCAT product, which helps you understand and retain information even better than before. Sketchy's been around the med school world forever with an amazing product that helps students ace their USMLE STEP exams. And now they're helping pre-med students in the MCAT world with an amazing bundle with Blueprint MCAT. So go check it out at blueprintmcat.com. All right, let's go ahead and jump in and talk to Mike about his journey, his slip-ups, and his recovery. Mike, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Dr. Gray. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to chat with you about your journey into medical school, talk about the ups and downs and all arounds. But before we jump into all of those specifics, when did you first realize you wanted to be a physician?
This was actually a while back when I was 8 years old, I believe. I had already spent some time coming to work with my mom. She worked as a CNA. And then later on, I would go to a couple book fairs that my school would host, and I found out about some science magazines where I learned about organ systems and things like that, like the cardiovascular, renal, all of it. And it really intrigued me. That's when I decided I really wanted to go into medicine. And then as I got older, my reasons kind of just kept piling on top of each other. Mm.
So you have this early exposure, early experience with healthcare, with your mom being involved in healthcare. So you're like, oh, this is really cool. When was the first time you remember kind of going and experiencing for yourself, seeing, okay, like I liked when I hung out with mom when she was working, but I don't know if I want to do this myself. When was the first time you stepped foot in that kind of clinical environment and got some experience yourself?
My first time for myself was probably not even until towards the end of college, maybe my junior or sophomore. Okay, not the end, maybe sophomore, junior year when I started to volunteer.
Okay.
And, you know, it wasn't really that much hands-on experience of like wheeling patients to one area, wheeling them to the, so they can get picked up, or like wiping down pre-op or post-op rooms.
Yeah.
So then I was like, well, I mean, this isn't really what I was expecting here. I don't know if this is something I still want to do. But especially when I didn't even know shadowing was a thing until later on in my college career, and I had already switched majors. But I didn't get my first experience shadowing until I think my very last semester in undergrad.
Okay. Interesting. So let's take a peek at kind of your academic journey. You started off college pretty well, and then you struggled your second year. What happened there? Going from kind of a 3.22, looking at your GPA here, 3.22 to a 1.88 cumulative GPA for each of those years. So 3.22 first year, 1.88 second year. What caused that big dip there?
I would say I could attribute it to a bunch of different things. One, I feel like I was kind of still easing into what exactly college was. The only idea of college I had was growing up was things that I had seen on TV. Being first generation, I couldn't really ask my mom. I didn't really have family members in the country to ask about it. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, I'm kind of just like feeling around and seeing what I could do, what works. And freshman year, coming in, I was still I felt like I was still academically pretty sound. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of distractions still, but I was still able to kind of just like get a grasp of things, mainly because a lot of what I was doing freshman year were things that I learned my senior year of high school. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't really rely on that my sophomore year. In addition, like, I believe growing up, I always had a lot of responsibilities. I had to be accountable for so many different people, this and that. And that was not the case for me in college. I was like, oh, all I have to do is get good grades. That's not a problem.
And piece of cake.
Yeah. And then I get to college and then I'm doing everything but worrying about my grades. Even started working a little bit, distracted myself. I don't want to say volunteering was a distraction, but I did give a lot of my time to that. In addition to like all the other fun college activities that may happen as well. So
yeah.
I allowed myself to be distracted very heavily. And after my sophomore year, that's when I was like, man, you're not acting like you want to be a doctor. This isn't it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the interesting thing, right? And that was the next question I was going to ask is, it sounds like, and looking at your transcript, it looks like you were on the path to be a pre-med, or you were a pre-med student at that point, thinking that you wanted to go to medical school. But you mentioned earlier that your kind of first exposures that you had yourself were a little bit later, kind of the tail end of second year, going into third year, with shadowing coming a little bit later. I wonder how much of that struggle that you had was because there was nothing tangible on the other side. You're kind of killing yourself with chemistry and OChem and physics and all these other classes, and you didn't really have, and I'm hypothesizing here, you didn't really have the idea and the picture and the visuals, the experiences being with and around patients where you were taking care of them and not necessarily just seeing it kind of secondhand through your mom at a younger age. Do you think that played a part at all in your kind of initial, what I would call burnout almost with your grades?
I would almost actually say, yeah, I didn't consider it until later on in my postdoc program. I had like a pretty heavy workload. And then there would be moments where after like 2 months, I'm like, man, all I've been doing is grinding. I finally make it into shadow this doctor that that's wonderful. And she would let me do rounds with her and her residents and everything. And after seeing patients with them and how they, like, over time help the patients get better, it was like something tangible I could see. Like, wow, like, it really invigorated me to be like, well, this is something I want to do. Like, now I can get back to my classes. Now I can, like, study harder, study longer and everything. And so eventually it got to the point every time I felt burnt out, I was like, okay, I guess I got to go shadow now and get my recharge, if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. I talk about it all the time. And I think students discount that side of the experience, and they just view the experience as a necessity for med schools and a time suck from studying. And they don't really understand that it's really a lot of times a reinvigoration of your why you're doing this, right? To give you the mental clarity and capacity to study harder and to study longer potentially. And so it's definitely something I love talking about, and it definitely looks like that from your side of things. When I look at your transcript here, you stopped taking science courses your third year. You took 16 credit hours first year, 10 credit hours second year, and then you don't have any your third and fourth year of undergrad. To me, it looks like you waved the white flag and you said either I don't want to be a doctor anymore, or maybe more realistically, you're like, I don't think I can be a doctor anymore.
Yeah, it was actually a combination of both. You know, we have advisors telling us, like, you need straight A's, maybe one B plus is acceptable, you know? And here I just finished off my sophomore year. I completely tanked it. And then I was like, well, I guess this is it for me. I had a horrible year. And then I was like, with these grades, with school, like, going through undergrad, especially as freshman and sophomore, all you hear is like, med school is very competitive. You need to be perfect. You need to be this, this, and that. I'm like, well, these grades up here are far from that. They're on the opposite spectrum. So I might as well try to do something else with my life. And I kind of did give up on being a physician at that point.
Yeah. What did you decide to go to at that point?
So I did want to, I knew I wanted to stay involved in healthcare, because I looked at, you know, especially in this day and age, there's a million things you could do, but nothing still seemed interesting to me. So yeah. I figured, well, maybe I could participate in like the business side of healthcare. So I looked at some of our majors at U of I, and I saw the option to do community health with a concentration in health planning and administration. And I actually really started to enjoy it a lot, especially when my classes became more focused. We started looking at how hospitals may like file their taxes, what goes into it, what goes into like reducing cost or improving patient quality or quality of care, things like that. And all of that was very interesting to me. And then there was also like a public health component. So overall, I was like, okay, well, yeah, I think I could see myself doing this, you know? And then during the last semester, I had to take an extra semester since I switched majors relatively late. And they make it mandatory to do an internship for the whole semester, in which you're doing an internship maybe 20 hours a week or so. And I got one at Carl Hospital in Urbana. And it started off all right. I'm like, okay, well, this seems pretty cool. But then after about 3-4 weeks, I'm like, I don't know if, I hear people say, I'm like, yeah, I've been working here for 30 years and their desk is in the basement of the hospital. They're crunching away Excel sheets, PowerPoints, this, this, and that. I'm like, for 30 years, it can't be me. I'm already tired of this after a couple of weeks. But then with the same opportunity, they make it so all the interns are able to watch one procedure. And I did want to be a neurosurgeon at one point, so let me watch this craniotomy. And it was awesome. I really liked it. I didn't even notice that I think I got into the room at 6:45 and didn't leave until close to 5 p.m., but the time almost flew by. Mm. And then I was like, man, like, are you sure you don't want to be a physician? And then I started looking up in different post-spec programs. Well, at first, I didn't even know what a post-spec program was. Kind of Googled, like, can I still be a doctor with bad grades?
Yeah, yeah. I was definitely going to ask. Like, at what point you kind of mentally go, okay, like, I think I want to try this again. But logistically, it's like, well, how do I and can I even? So it sounds like you did what everyone else does. You went right to Google and like, can I do this?
Yeah, exactly. And that's when I found out, I think it was like post-baccast, something like that. And I found a list of different post-bacs that I could apply to.
So post-baccast, for people that don't know, is it's basically the centralized application service for a lot of post-bac programs here in the country. Not every single post-bac program uses it. It's a newer centralized application service that has been around now for probably 4 or 5 years. So that's what you found.
Mm-hmm. So I used that and tried to stay local because I don't come from a lot of money. So paying for a post-bac program is going to be very difficult. And if I go out of town, that would have been way more expensive. So if I did decide to do something like that, or if I got accepted to a program like that, my thing was that it'd have to be something that was kind of like a linkage program. And linkage programs, from everything I was seeing, are all already like pretty competitive.
Yeah. So you have this experience where you take a look at post-bac programs, and it sounds like you didn't really do a ton of research between like, what is a post-bac program or what is a special master's program? Is that right? You found post-bac and you're like, okay, I guess this is what I need to do.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of a special master's program until I was already in my post-bac program.
Okay. And what was it about the post-bac program and post-bac CAS and seeing that? What about it did it tell you like, oh, this is for me?
So I think I ended up applying to 4 different programs based off cost and location. And the ones that I chose were basically came down to something that would kind of improve my undergrad GPA. That's one. Somewhere where I can take and retake all the pre-med science courses that I didn't take in undergrad. Because after, well, the Gen Chem 2, I have no further chemistry. I hadn't taken physics yet. What else? I think I fulfilled like maybe half of the biology requirement. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
So I wanted somewhere where I could take all those undergrad classes. And that kind of limited my choices by a lot. Because everyone was like, oh, if you've completed your undergrad, you have to do like a graduate thing. Graduate post-bac, and that wasn't really in the books for me because I don't really have the competency for the previous level.
What do you mean you didn't have the competency?
I hadn't taken physics basically, so I wouldn't be able to meet the requirements basically to just to apply for med school, I feel like.
Okay.
Because they require physics 1 and 2.
Yep.
Or go 1 or 2 with. Yep. Biochem, depending on each school's thing. So I wanted somewhere where I could just straight up do all of those courses.
Yeah, definitely, right? You were missing those courses and your GPA wasn't good enough to prove to medical schools that you were going to do it. What do you think was the switch? Because you came out swinging in your post-bac and crushed it with almost a 4.0. What was the difference for you?
I was it was kind of like an all or nothing. It's like, Mike, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to do this with your life, you cannot mess around. I also wanted to prove to myself that I was still academically sound, because all my life I had not struggled in school. And I got to college and completely messed up. And so then it was kind of like a mental thing, like, man, am I actually smart, or was everything just a hoax?
Yeah.
But I came in and was like, all right, I'm not messing around. I'm not talking to people. I'm not making friends. I'm just going to do my work. And that didn't necessarily happen. I ended up becoming friends with like my whole cohort somehow. And was still able to do really well. Honestly, I was not messing around, period. And I also believe the weird thing about me is when I have, I guess the amount of effort I put into things is proportional to how difficult something is. So if I'm taking all these classes, and I was also taking classes from home, so I'm like helping out at home, I'm helping out with caretaking, helping. I was like busy all around, so there was no time to like mess around or waste time. It was like, get this done, get this done, get this done, move on, get next thing done. Mm-hmm. Every day was literally checking off lists of things that I needed to get done for the day. Mm-hmm. I was not playing.
You were playing. No, ain't nobody got time for all that other stuff. So it sounds like that typically comes with maturity of prioritizing. Look, I know I should be studying, but I'm 19, I'm 20, I want to go have fun. It sounds like mm-hmm. you kind of got over that.
Yeah, big time.
If you were to go back and tell your younger self, like, hey, like, stop messing around, what do you think you could have told yourself to maybe prioritize studying back then? Or do you think it was just a necessary kind of process that you went through?
I probably would have told myself to remember where you're coming from, because I didn't have the easiest upbringing, and it took a lot of resources and a lot of sacrifices and a lot of effort to get me to college. And even now, I still look back and I get pretty disappointed about how I acted during then. And it gets frustrating somehow. But so right now, I'm just happy I was able to kind of make up for it. Mm-hmm. But even then, going through all of that, right now I can say at least I got it out of me. At least I've experienced those things, because I had a relatively strict childhood where I couldn't really do anything. So at least I was able to get all that stuff out of me. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot during the process as well, like about myself, about other people, about how I should be interacting with people and who I should be involving in my circles, or who should actually be called a friend versus an acquaintance, or maybe there's something in between. Not everyone's your friend, things like that.
Yeah. As you were kind of looking at this process and thinking about doing the post-bac or even in your post-bac, did you get any sort of pushback about your earlier poor grades and told like there's no way you're going to get into med school? Why bother?
Not really. My advisor was very encouraging, actually. The only pushback, tech quote unquote pushback, would be stuff I saw online where it was like Student Doctor Network. Oh, you had this happen to you. You had like this GPA that year, no shot, you know, things like that. But and I like filtered everything out. It's like, if I want to do this, like I have to try my best, do what I can. I can't really dwell on the past that much. Otherwise, I won't make it anywhere.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when it came to your application, what do you think was the hardest part of the applications to medical school?
The hardest part, I feel like the hardest part for the application was finishing my post-bac program, honestly. When it came time to actually fill out the application, I felt so at ease, because to me, the hard part was doing all my classes together and taking care of my grandma and doing X, Y, and Z. So when all of that had stopped and I could just focus on my primary, I can't say it was like that difficult for me. especially once I found your YouTube channel in May, kind of became my guilty pleasure to, okay, I'm done studying for the MCAT today. It's 9 p.m. I'm going to work on my MCAT and watch Dr. Gray's YouTube series and see like how people would write their own things. Because before then, I was like, my disadvantage statement was, I'd say it was pretty garbage. I didn't know we could like, you know, tell stories, share stats, you know, share where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. I just said, oh, I'm disadvantaged because we had one clinic in our neighborhood that was understaffed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things I don't like about the AAMC's disadvantaged criteria is it's so focused on underserved medical kind of location-wise. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, like talk about the human being behind the application, not the area that they grew up in. I don't understand mm-hmm. why they focus so much on the location and medical underserved kind of definitions of being in a medical served area. It's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
So you figured that out. You told that story.
Yeah. Your YouTube series was really helpful for me, especially getting to see what the application would look like. Mm-hmm. And one of my concerns, even coming into the application process, was like, well, I wrote my personal statement. I feel like I put pieces of my life that I could, but I feel like there's also so many pieces of my life that I just couldn't fit in there, but are also very important to me and very prominent in my life. I didn't know what to do with that. And so I saw you going through people's application. I saw there are options to do three meaningful experiences. I was like, oh, this is perfect. You know, I get to share this here, and that was very beneficial to me. Otherwise, I feel like I wouldn't have been able to paint a full picture of myself.
Yeah. How did you figure out which ones you wanted to mark as most meaningful?
I looked at things that were, I would say, are still impactful to me today. So I'm not sure if you have my application open, but I did discuss some. One was an organization that I participated in throughout all of college. It's called Camp Kesem. It's a student-run organization where we provide a free week of camp to children whose parents or loved ones have cancer. Mm-hmm. And we kind of create something like an escape for them, with the exception of a day where we kind of like dig deep, and if they want to, they have the opportunity to share how their family members' cancer has made them feel, what it has done to them, things like that. Mm-hmm. And after my freshman year is when I first started, and since then I couldn't let it go. I still talk to my friends about it. If they're going into college, I say, hey, see if your school has a chapter of Camp Kesem. It's a really great organization, and I promise you will love it. Things like that. And then I wrote about bringing my grandma's caretaker, just because not only was it taking up a lot of my time, but it was also something where it's like coming home from college, I had kind of like took it upon myself to be responsible for my grandma's healthcare, especially since like my mom is a single mother, and she was like she works a ridiculous amount, maybe like 80 to 100 hours a week. So it's like she's doing this, she's taking care of the home, she's taking my grandma to her doctor's appointments and chemo can take all day. So it's like she's doing all this, and now that I'm back from college, I say like I can pick that up myself. And even just going through that process, just seeing how it can be challenging for my grandma, especially since English isn't her first language, and she's also not from this country. She just came here quite a few years. She's been here for some time now, but still, like, this isn't, she didn't grow up in Western culture. You know, we get into a hospital, they're using all these big terms and this and that. And my grandma has mastered the skill of speaking in a certain way that'll have the person ask her questions believe that she understands, just so she can get them to stop talking.
Yep.
And then when she says that, and the physician thinks this, I'm like, well, I can't say anything anymore because she just said she understood it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's basically, I guess like with my grandma, I basically do a lot of like patient advocating, which has become pretty prominent to me. And I look at that as a skill that basically all physicians are meant to have as well. And it's also my grandma. We spend a lot of time with each other, so it's going to be a meaningful experience to me. And then my other one was actually something that I did throughout my summers in high school, but it's something that I could say is still impactful to me. I was a caddy for all summers after freshman year of high school up until summer after my freshman year of college. And I did receive a full tuition scholarship called the Chick Evans Scholarship to attend U of I. And it's something that I could say is so impactful for me today, because people will ask, oh, like, why do you do this? Why do you do that? And the story always goes back, well, I caddied before, so I walk a little faster. I caddied before, so I'm accustomed to kind of networking with multiple people about, or people that I'd never seen before, you know, things like that. There's a lot of life skills that I picked up from it, including like perseverance and resilience, because my caddy master would put it in my face whenever I didn't do well my first year, and it really stuck with me. I did not give up on it, and I'm grateful I didn't, because I would not have been able to go to college if that was the case.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Just a clarification or a note. Camp Kesem is KESEM. That's kesem.org for people who want to go check that out. Looks like a cool organization to get involved in. So thanks for sharing that. When it came to actually submitting your application, what was that process like? The waiting process. You submitted, it looks like, on day one in the afternoon. You submitted your application, and it amazes me that it still took 2 months to process. I'm assuming you had what a lot of people had, and you had transcript issues. Is that what happened?
That's exactly what happened.
That's terrible. So you're dealing with the stress of figuring out transcripts, and if people don't remember or didn't know, like the IIMC during this time had submission issues, and just where to submit and where were people, and do you mail them and where do you mail them? And this was in 2021, like a year into the pandemic, when they should have figured this out already. They still had issues. So thank you, IIMC, for continuing to make this process horrible for everyone. The waiting game is hard. What was it like when you got that first interview invite?
Well, I got teary-eyed. It started to get pretty emotional for me, because I thought back to when I was like the little kid that wanted to be a physician, thought back to like my experiences in high school, thought back to college, how I messed up, thought back to my performance in my post-bac program. And then it felt surreal that like I'm here knocking on the doors of med schools, and then someone actually wants to interview me. So it's like, wow, I can't believe this is actually happening. It didn't feel real. I told everybody I had an interview. I was so excited. I was just happy. Like, even I was just grateful along the whole way. Like, I was happy to be submitting an application, happy to be picking schools to put on the application. I was happy throughout the process, because I feel like I got here against many odds.
Yeah. That's awesome. I definitely would be happy in telling everyone as well. How did you prepare for that first interview?
I looked over my application a couple times. Mm-hmm. I also went through the school's mission and values. I kind of like searched through basically the whole website.
Yeah.
See if there was any information that I could use. They did let me know the two faculty members that would be interviewing me, so I kind of researched them too, trying to see who these people are. And then I actually did find out, after I did that interview, I found out you actually had an interview book, so I read that afterwards. But I was, after reading it, I did realize I was able to apply a lot of the things that you discussed, and I made that interview. It was pretty conversation, like I would say. But since it was my first interview, I could also say that I felt like I started off rambling because they would ask me one question, I'd give the answer, and then I'd continue talking, and they'd be like, oh, wait, like that was a follow-up question we were going to ask. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. It's just, I think I was just really excited to be there, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So you go through this process. How much of your prior undergraduate GPA struggles, how much did that come up in your interviews?
Not as often as I thought it would. Well, kind of, but it wasn't like prominent. Mm-hmm. Because I had even marked that I had received institutional action or whatever the term is for falling below GPA thing. Mm-hmm. And some schools are like, oh, well, yeah, we don't really care about that. You rocked your post-bac program. We understand that. You get it. I was like, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or sometimes with another interview, they would ask, like, also, like, what did happen here? And did you learn something from it? And I was like, well, yeah, I learned a lot about myself. And that's it. They weren't like really digging in, like, oh, you have 2, 3, 4 W's. You got a D here. It was none of that.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? It's very much a what have you done for me lately kind of sentiment. And honestly, they're just looking for academic capability, which you showed in your post-bac, which is why I talk all the time about upward trend. You went from having your second year a 1.92 science GPA, a 1.88 cumulative GPA in your second year, right? Not cumulative, but your second year GPA was a 1.88. Not great, right?
But
then you went from that 1.92 second year GPA, science GPA, to a 3.96 science GPA in your post-bac program, over 30 credits. You showed academic capability. And while, and I talk about this all the time, while your final numbers aren't super sexy because of your early struggles, you still showed that academic capability. Something clicked, whether it's more maturity, better clarity of what you wanted out of life, whatever it was, you showed everyone reviewing your application, I can handle medical school. That's all. You got the interviews. You got the acceptances. You did what you needed to do. And so I will never stop screaming from the rooftops about that upward trend. What was the most interesting part of the application process? Maybe a question that you were really surprised about, or an interest in one of your activities you were really surprised about. What was something interesting about your interview process?
I had an interview with Mary, and it was kind of different than the other interviews I had done. This faculty member was actually asking me a lot of mentally stimulating questions, and it got to a point where, like, I didn't know what to say.
Like what? What's a mentally stimulating question?
So, for example, we got on the topic of how underrepresented minorities would want to give back to their communities once they become established, once like they become a physician, they're earning whatever. They want to come back into their communities, hopefully start a clinic, do some kind of patient education type of stuff, or just give back in any way. And he brought up a study that doesn't happen at all. So
yeah,
what could I do specifically to ensure him that I wouldn't fall into that category, you know? And I can't really say anything different than what anyone else was saying, because everyone else is probably saying the same thing that I said, like, oh, I come from this community, like I grew up here, I understand how it is, you know. He's probably heard that a million times. So after a while, I was just kind of like stumped. And then I think I said something along the lines of growing up in Chicago, I have constant reminders, even if I'm not in one of these underrepresented communities or underprivileged or underserved communities, that there's going to be a need for help, for service, for people to give back. Because in Chicago, it's not like, even if you're not in a lower socioeconomical area, if you could be in a pretty privileged area and still see homeless people like in those areas as well.
Yeah.
So it's not like you move up your social class and then you're in a high rise and you never see homeless people. You never see people struggling again. Mm-hmm. So I kind of used that as my example. But even then, I felt like that wasn't a great answer because, I don't know, I feel like I can't really, if studies show it, I can't really say like, oh, I'm the outlier, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, right? My assumption, without knowing the data in that specific study, is my assumption is just living life myself, is that you just get into a situation where from an economic standpoint, right, you come from not a lot, you start to make money, you still have bills and other stuff, but you have what's known as kind of lifestyle creep, where your lifestyle that you get used to continues to rise with your paycheck. And so while you have all these good intentions on the outset of giving back, you don't have much to give back when you actually take it all into account. You're like, oh, I got my Mercedes-Benz to pay for. I have my 5-bedroom, 6-bathroom house to pay for. I got my boat to pay for, whatever, right? But then just life in general gets in the way, and you're working all the time, and that takes a lot of mental energy and time, and you just don't prioritize and aren't intentional. And so it's interesting to see that the study kind of supports what I would assume happens, is people just get busy. And it's not that they are lying at the beginning and going, ha ha, I'm going to say I'm going to give back, and then I'm really not going to. It's just life gets in the way, and they they don't have time for it, which is a bummer. But interesting. So you go through this process. I keep harping on the second year GPA of less than a 2 as that big pivot point for you, which was like a kind of a gut check of like, do I really want this? If I did want it, I would be doing better. Can I still do it? My GPA doesn't show that I can. Are med schools ever going to believe me or give me a chance? And so you pivot away from medicine, you come back to it at some point, and you show the world, like, make no mistake, like, I can do this. So I love that kind of upward trend. I love that story of kind of refinding yourself a little bit later, which is perfectly fine to do. And it shows you with multiple interviews. How many acceptances do you have at this point?
I have one so far. I've had I got one wait list as well.
Okay.
And I still have a good amount of schools that I hadn't heard anything from. So it's not a rejection, which is great. Just not an interview invite.
Yeah. Yeah, so much silence from schools. It's unfortunate that there's not better communication there. We're working on that. We're trying to harass the schools more and more to get them to communicate better through this process. What was it like to get that acceptance phone call or email?
Oh, that's when, instead of being teary eyed, I actually just cried. Yeah, it was very emotional for me, and it was really out of the blue. I came back, I got into my car from Jewel High School. I was like, oh, let me check my email real quick. I see the preview. It was like, we are pleased to congratulate you, or something like that. And then I didn't even open the email. I didn't read the rest of it. I just like put the phone down in the passenger seat and started crying in my car for about 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh man, I got to tell my mom. So I started driving home, teary faced.
Yeah.
And I tell her, and then she starts screaming and doing this, and and then my grandma's upstairs like, what happened?
That's awesome.
But yeah, it was a great experience. I won't forget that.
Yeah. What do you say to the student going through this process, maybe in a similar situation to yourself second year where you're getting your poor grades, you get put on a kind of academic probation because of those grades, doubting yourself all along the way? What do you say to those students who may be going through the same thing, but in their heart know that they want to be a physician?
I would say keep persevering. You're always, especially when something like that happens, you're going to have a lot of people telling you, maybe this isn't for you. Maybe you shouldn't do it. Maybe you should give up. You'll probably even be telling yourself that. But you have to fight those voices. And if this is really what you want, you got to keep pushing forward. Do your best. Seek out the help you need. Seek out mentoring, guidance, anything that would help you reach your goals, and do what you can.
All right, so there you have it again, Mike, overcoming that early poor GPA. This is key to understand when we're talking about upward trend and what that means and what that looks like and what it can do to help you overcome any hiccups along the way. Hopefully this was encouraging. If you've been there, hopefully you haven't been, but if you have been, hopefully it is encouraging to give you some strength and encouragement to know that you can overcome on your journey to medical school. Don't forget to go check out BlueprintMCAT.com. Check out that amazing new Sketchy MCAT and Blueprint MCAT bundle today. We have a great day. We'll see you next week here on the Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.